2 o'clock. Joining us now is Debbie Kruger. Debbie, I was reading some of Debbie's book at the weekend, a lot of Debbie's book at the weekend. It's called Songwriters Speak, Conversations About Creating Music. And you, this really is a work of passion, I would think. Debbie, welcome.
A labour of love. Hi, Greg.
A labour of love. Is it that?
It was, yeah. It was something that I felt needed to be done. Somebody needed to document the stories of our greatest musical poets, and not in a, on a small scale. It needed to be done in a big, authoritative, weighty way. And it suddenly became a compulsion for me. I wanted to be the person who did that.
I imagine sometimes, too, when you take on a labour of love like this, you start with a certain plan in mind, and the more you get into it, maybe a 300-page book blows out to the 600 pages it now is.
Oh, no, it was always going to be 600
pages. Oh, was it?
Pages. Yeah, I thought I would be able to fit 60 songwriters into 600 pages, but it became obvious that I would have to keep it down. So 45 songwriters, it's still a big work.
We underestimate. I was talking at the start of the show today, the things we take for granted, just in terms of the space shuttle and the technologies and everything around us these days. And I think it's also true of our musicians and the contribution they make to our lifestyles and our lives in this country.
Well, our songwriters, certainly, because there is no music without the songwriter, and they are often overlooked, particularly those who aren't necessarily performers or aren't the lead singer in a band, the people, you know, who are playing the keyboard or who are just there in the studio. These are the people that create the magic that, you know, other people go on stage and sing. So
who have been our greatest, and we'll talk about some of them and play a little bit of their music too, but who have been our greatest? It'll be hard for you. I mean, they're all your children here, but our greatest songwriters in Australia and New Zealand.
Well, when you say New Zealand, obviously you think the Finn brothers, Neil and Tim Finn. And we like to claim them for our own. They're very much New Zealanders, but they had their biggest success in Australia, and I really wanted them to be in this book. And they're by far the most successful musical exports from New Zealand. In terms of Australia, there's such a wide spectrum of talent. You know, Rolf Harris, a lot of people said, why have you interviewed Rolf Harris in a book about songwriters? And I said, well, hello, the guy wrote Timey Kangaroo Downsport and Sun Arise. He's actually a fine songwriter and a very musical man, a very knowledgeable man and classically trained. So from someone like Rolf Harris to the great Nick Cave, who many think of as one of our most eminent contemporary songwriters, and then many of the legends from the 60s and 70s, such as Brian Cadd, Jim Keys from The Master's Apprentices, Glenn Shorrock and Graham Goble from Little River Band, and quintessentially Australian songwriters like John Williamson, the guys from Midnight Oil. I mean, there's such a vast array of them. I went to all of them.
Listen to you. You're so passionate about all of this. It's great. I want to ask you about Bruce Woodley's comments related to John Williamson in just a moment. He gets a little bit touchy, a little bit sensitive about the question when you ask him about I Am, You Are, We All Are Australian.
I Am Australian.
And True Blue. You kind of link them, and Bruce says, well, hold on a second, let's not be linking those.
Well, I'm very interested in anthemic songs, because to write a song that becomes something of a popular anthem can be a fine line to tread, because you don't want a song to be so jingoistic that it becomes uncool. And I think both I Am Australian and True Blue are songs that have been popular and have also gone on to become kinds of anthems. So I simply said to, we were talking, Bruce Woodley and I, about I Am Australian, and mentioned, well, True Blue in the same breath, that these are anthems. And he...
Big mistake, Debbie.
He just wanted to point out that he didn't feel True Blue was the same kind of song as I Am Australian.
No, he doesn't suffer from underestimating his own talent, you would think, Bruce. Understandably, he's a very fine talent.
He's a very talented man, and has an incredible background, the early days of the Seekers. He wrote with Paul Simon.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, he is one of the only people in the entire world to have ever co-written songs with Paul Simon. And this was way back in the mid to late 60s when Simon and Garfunkel were recording Bridge Over Troubled Water. And Bruce and Paul just spent some time over a few days writing some songs. They wrote one called Red Rubber Ball, which was a number one hit in America for a group called The Circle, but also recorded by The Seekers. And a really wonderful little folk pop song.
Red Rubber Ball, remember? I should have known. Yes, good song. I had no idea that Paul Simon had co-written that.
Well, you can hear the melancholy in it, you know, the worst is over now, I think it's going to be all right.
There's Paul Simon.
So Paul Simon, you know, yeah. that's not something that would naturally come to the Seekers, you know, because they were always very up.
An important song, Back A Ways, was Ronnie Burns' Smiley.
Well, written by Johnny Young.
Mm.
About it was one of Australia's first anti-Vietnam songs, and it was actually inspired by Normie Rowe, who was a big pop star here in the 60s, went over to
and
Vietnam.
And he's probably listening right now, and I hope you're well, Normie.
Hi, Normie. And Johnny has told this story many times about how he observed Normie when he returned from Vietnam and sensed a change in his demeanour. As with many people, young people who went to Vietnam and came back, and there was a shift. They just weren't as light.
How could you not change?
There was a weight. And so that's what he wrote Smiley about. Normie didn't necessarily know this until sometime later.
Is that right, huh? It's interesting, isn't it? Because you mentioned Johnny Young, and we got used to Johnny with a young talent time and all of that, but seeing him on Stevie Wright's This Is Your Life last week, you just remembered how key he was to a lot of all of that. And Stevie writing that song Step Back for him in the circumstances he did.
And Johnny Young wrote The Real Thing.
Mm.
I must never forget that he wrote what I consider to be probably the most seminal pop song ever written and recorded in Australia. I really believe that. That's one thing that came to me from this book. A number of people I spoke to who were involved with that song, Brian Cadd and his group at the time, The Group, played on The Real Thing. John Farrar, the great songwriter who wrote all Olivia Newton-John's big songs, including You're the One That I Want, full stop. He doesn't have to do anything else in his life after writing that song. He played guitar on The Real Thing and helped arrange it. Johnny Young wrote it. Ian Meldrum, of course, produced it. Russell Morris, a songwriter in his own right, performed it. I always see The Real Thing as a song that brought so many people in the Melbourne music scene particularly together and really was a turning point.
But what was it? What was it about that song? Come see The Real Thing, see The Real Thing, come and see. What was The Real Thing?
Oh, The Real Thing to Johnny Young, he talks about this at length, was just no BS, you know. No, there was so much stuff that people were sprouting at the time. Hey, man, this is the real thing. And Johnny's attitude was, look, we are the real thing. People are the real thing. Relationships are the real thing. He wrote it late one night jamming with his band when I'd say they were all a little bit under the influence. And he had no intention of it being anything other than a nice little acoustic rambling number. But Ian Meldrum just happened to be in the room and said, you have to give this to me. I want Russell. Because Ian was managing and producing Russell Morris, and Johnny was like, oh, no, man, no, it's just my little thing, you know. And he went knocking on Johnny's door at 3 a.m, give it to me, give it to me. So Johnny literally sat down and recorded it into a tape for Molly, who then went on and made it, you know, bigger than Ben-Hur, put everything, including the kitchen sink on it.
This is terrific. The book is called, by the way, Songwriters Speak, and they have spoken very openly and very honestly with Debbie Kruger, conversations about creating music. You mentioned Brian Cadd.
Brian Cadd was a really important songwriter back in the early 70s. Quite apart from his involvement in The Group and then Axiom, for which he wrote Little Ray of Sunshine, co-wrote that with Don Moody, one of the all-time classic Australian songs. He then went on and became a very successful solo singer-songwriter in an era where there weren't that many solo singer-songwriters in Australia. It was a very band-oriented music scene that we had. And he was really at the forefront of that solo movement. And he wrote such beautiful and vivid songs such as Ginger Man and Let Go. He had a very successful career in America for a long time as well.
What was Ginger Man about?
Ginger Man, Brian said,
great
was
song.
Actually his high noon. Brian was very inspired by Westerns, spaghetti Westerns, you know, John Wayne, the whole thing. He loved American Westerns. And Ginger Man was his musical version of a Western where this cowboy's riding across the land, across the plains, and the mail is always behind him by about a year. So he finds out all this news about you know, his girlfriend back home and all the people he left behind long after it's happened.
Ginger Man. Oh, that is such a a good song. Somebody said once, it might have been Ralph Steadman, one of the original founders of Rolling Stone, that the music you listen to is the soundtrack of your life. And you play a song like that, and you can straight away remember so much about the time and places and friends. And
well, one of the interesting things about doing this book is you can't possibly be a committed and dedicated fan of everyone you're going to interview in a book of 45 songwriters. So there were some who I interviewed, and I didn't have to particularly study their work because I knew every song on every album. There were others who I actually did make a point of sitting down and listening to all their work, and then I realised how much a part of the soundtrack of my life their songs have been. And I'm thinking particularly because I grew up as a teenager in the 70s. So Little River Band, Sherbet, Vander and Young, they were very much a part of my soundtrack. But in the 80s, without even realising it, the music of Mental as Anything, Ivor Davies and Ice House, Midnight Oil, had been in my soundtrack, but I hadn't necessarily realised it until I sat down and listened to all their work and went, oh, I remember when I was at uni and I remember what I was doing then. And so it was quite a joy.
But it's also interesting, Debbie, isn't it? You can hear a song 1,000 times, and I did that only with a Brian Cadd song, I think, last week. You can hear a song 1,000 times and then suddenly you hear a line that had just passed through to the keeper for years and years. You talk about Bridge Over Troubled Water, same thing. You can listen to that now and you'll pick up something new or fresh about it every single time.
Yeah, well, one of the wonderful things about talking to these songwriters and hearing their stories, and don't ask me for an example right now, but there were certainly instances where we would discuss a song and they would tell me what was behind a certain line, and I go, oh, I never realised that. I mean, just talking to James Rain about Indisposed, which was an early Australian Crawl song, and that was written about James when he broke both of his arms.
Oh, okay.
And he couldn't do a thing for himself, and he literally was indisposed. So they wrote that song about him. And I listened to that song for 20-something years and hadn't realised.
And projected all kinds of stuff onto it.
Oh, you really were indisposed. He said, absolutely.
It's 28-2 on 4BC. Greg Carey until 3. William McGuinness after the news at 2. Debbie Kruger sitting in now. You talked about Little River Band, and this, you know, apart from being a really important band in Australia, it was a really interesting one in terms of the songwriting dynamic that went on there.
There were three key songwriters, Glenn Shorrock, Graham Goble and Bee Birtles. They didn't always necessarily get on, so they were very fine songwriters in their own right. Occasionally Goble and Birtles would write together, but Glenn Shorrock always saw himself as quite different to the other guys in the band. He'd been around a bit longer and he was already a bit world weary. So a song like Cool Change, for instance, was very much his response to the tensions in the band, people not getting on, fighting over which songs would get recorded. And when he goes, you know, I just, time for a cool change, that was literally a reference to, I just need to get away from all this drama, get out into the open water and have a break.
And Debbie, you're saying that's one of Glenn's most favourite songs.
It's certainly one of his favourite songs of his own, and also it's one of the songs he's best known for, and yet it was never released as a single. It wasn't a hit. It was an album track. It's just a consummate song.
What about the money side of all of this? Because I know there were tensions within Little River Band, weren't there, about songwriting royalties and all of that. Was Graham the one who was upset?
Graham spoke about this a lot. Well, it was Graham's opinion, as he tells it in the book, that the other members were perhaps resentful because it was Graham's songs that kept being released as singles in America, where the real airplay was. As it is, he's had well over 4 million airplays on American radio of Reminiscing.
How much would that be worth?
Well, he received a 4 million air award for that about 4 years ago, so he's probably up to 5 million by now. I can't tell you, but we're talking good, you know, good royalties.
Oh, yeah. Well, say what, 10 cents a play or something like that?
I don't know, Greg.
Could be even,
I
goodness
really
me. Plus a percentage of every album sold.
Well, there are sales royalties and then there are performance royalties. I mean, definitely if you can make it as a songwriter rather than just a performer, you're on a good wicket. And so when you have a band where there are more than one or two chief songwriters, there is tussling about whose song will be recorded on the album.
Yes.
And Graham is very honest about that in our interview and talks at length about those tensions. And then when you read Glenn Shorrock's chapter, he just goes, oh, I just wanted a cool change. It's too much of a hassle for me.
Pat Agindalee, welcome.
Oh, Greg.
Yes.
I think I heard this story on 4BC regarding Brian Cadd.
Right.
Apparently it was around about Christmas time. He's in a shopping centre. You know, he's got the beautiful big long white beard. And a little child ran up and said, I've been good, I've been good.
Caddy.
True story.
He was looking a bit like that last time I saw him too.
Yeah, that's right.
Good on you, Pat. Thank you very much. I think living in the Gold Coast hinterland these days.
No, Brian's in Sydney now.
Is
actually
he back down there?
Spent a bit of time with him last week when we launched the book in Sydney. He's fabulous.
Yeah.
In fact, he's got a new album coming out this week.
Oh, terrific stuff.
Yeah, but he did spend quite a bit of time in Queensland.
Richard Clapton was one of my favourites there for a little while too. You spent some time with him?
Yes, I did. I spent a very interesting several hours talking to Richard about his life in songwriting. Quite a character. Quite everything is a trauma and an adventure for Richard Clapton. But the most interesting thing about Clapton is he's what we would call one of Australia's more iconic songwriters. And some of his songs are considered to be real iconic Australian songs, Deep Water, Lucky Country. The irony about Richard Clapton is that he wrote those very Australian songs over in Europe in the middle of winter. When he wrote about Palm Beach and Bondi Beach and Deep Water, he was actually overlooking a frozen beach in Denmark.
Ah.
He said to me that he often felt closest to home and pining for the fields, as he called it, when he was far away, and he needed to leave Australia constantly to be able to feel close to his home.
So that great song, Deep Water,
He wrote in Denmark.
In the snow.
He sort of got the idea for it in Australia, but he actually wrote it in Europe.
And what was the idea? What was it about that song?
It started off as a song just about hanging out at Bondi Beach with a couple of his friends, Christina Markle Hegarty, and so he went over to Denmark and he put that all down. He sort of wrote that song. It was sometime later when he was back in Australia. He was very hungover one morning on the Palm Beach Road up at Palm Beach in the northern peninsula of Sydney, and with a girlfriend, and they were fighting right next to their broken down car, and she went off to call the NRMA, and he sat there and he found a scrap of paper and a pen on the floor of the car, and he wrote, "Oh, on the Palm Beach Road, I'm so drunk and the car won't go." You know, and suddenly he was just documenting how he was feeling, and that suddenly became the bridge of Deep Water.
Ah, that is sensational. The book is called Songwriters Speak with Debbie Kruger, and we'll come back and wrap this up in just a moment. William McGuinness, by the way, comes in just a little after the 2 o'clock news. This is 4BC.
Brisbane's 4BC with Greg Carey.
William McGuinness will join us a little after the news at 2. Rodney Gibson's advice on the market, not far away, 13:13:32 it is. Our guest has been a really interesting guest as well. Debbie Kruger, whose book is called Songwriters Speak, Conversations About Creating Music, and it really is a very interesting book. Before you go, though, one of the songwriters you do talk about, and I'm really glad that you do, because he can be forgotten sometimes when we talk about the great Australian songwriters, my friend Graham.
Graham Connors of fine Queenslander from up in Mackay. I went and spent 4 days in Mackay with he and his family. Graham and I are mates anyway, and it's always lovely to talk music with a good friend. He is the consummate songwriter. He is the songwriter's songwriter. Great songwriters like Don Walker and Troy Cassidaly seek Graham out to write with him. And Graham and I had a really lovely long discussion about all of his music that he'd written for himself and songs he'd written for the likes of Slim Dusty. A song like A Little Further North, obviously a classic Queensland song, but also tapping in on a real Australian thing, that thing about just heading north, getting away from it all, kind of an extension of the Glen Shorrock Cool Change idea, really, but not just getting away from tension on a particular day. It's like moving on, going somewhere better and having a good life. That's what A Little Further North is about.
He was ahead of his time with that song too, because
he was, and it was sometime after that that people did start that migration north, and a lot of people have settled in Queensland from Victoria and New South Wales, and they come up to Graham now and they say, "Your song was like the soundtrack for my move."
It's a great song. Great book. Good to see you, Debbie.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
luck with
you,
it.
Greg. Thanks for having me.
There's a website too.
The website is www.songwriterspeak, all one word, .com, songwriterspeak.com.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Great song, and a really nice man too, and this is a very good book, Debbie Kruger's, now available around the place. It's coming up 12 to 2. You might have a great Australian song you'd like to share with us, the great Australian songwriters. It's Greg Carey until 3 this afternoon. Telephone number until then, 13 13 32, and John Miller after 3.